Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of MixerG, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And you would think that by now I'd kind of understand where all the revenue is, where all the interesting businesses are, but I still don't. We're talking about over 1,500 actually, interviews that I've done, and still, I'm surprised where there are pockets of opportunity. Like, today's guest would have totally shocked me, and I would have said absolutely not to having her on, except I now understand this space, and it's amazing. So here's the deal. Joining me right now is Crystal, and I want to make sure, Crystal, that I'm pronouncing your last name right, Krustuk.
You got it right.
Look at that.
Yes.
She is the founder of Teslio, and what they do is it's basically a marketplace that connects people with products and testers. So they get them testers to test out their software. I know this is like overly simplistic. I'm going to let her explain it in more detail within this interview. But the part that I would have been surprised by is that there's a marketplace of testers, that there's a demand for testers that's so big that, as she's telling me, it's one of the hottest, fastest growing areas of IT. So we're going to find out how she built up this business, how she discovered it, where she's getting customers, how she's managing a marketplace of testers, and more importantly, what you can learn from her experience to grow your own business. This interview is sponsored by two great companies. The first, you and Crystal both know. It's called Pipe Drive. You know it because I've been talking about it in past interviews. She knows it because she knows the founder. And the second company is going to help you create beautiful forms that do more than just collect information. I'll tell you more about them later, but for now, they're called Form Stack. Oh, I still have a hoarse voice from speaking at a conference, but Crystal, it's good to have you on here.
Thank you for having me, Andrew. I'm super excited. I've been waiting for this for a couple of months now, I would say.
Oh, sweet. Good. I'm so glad to have you on here. Here's the first question. You understand that I'm coming from a good place here, so it's not super challenging, but testers? Why does someone need testers? Can't you just create a Facebook group of potential users and existing users? And when you have a brand new release of your software, go to your Facebook group and say, can I get any beta testers? Give the beta testers early access, get their feedback, improve the product. Boom, free. And you get actual users, not paid people. Why doesn't that work?
I love that question. It's such a great question. And the best way to answer it is, imagine your company has 100 million users and everyone, one of them, has different devices, different locations that they're on. Like, they have so many different varieties that affect their performance of the mobile app, right? And then you have all this feedback coming in, like flowing into your Facebook group, and it's just coming overwhelming, right? Like, your support tickets, the number of support tickets is raising. And then you start realizing, okay, like, how can we, like, we know that there's an issue happening in production, but how can we actually replicate it? So that's why you need expert testers to really understand, like, what is the cause of the issue, write down, like, very clear steps on, like, how the issue is reproducible, on what the environments, on what devices, and that's where the real value of testing comes in. And overall, when you look at the, like the testing market, then the best way to think about it is we really help customers to provide better experience for their users through like really helping them prioritize a lot of the issues that are coming in. Because if you have 100 million users, like every one of the customers is going to have different issues. But our job is to really prioritize those issues and then let the customer know, okay, here are like top 10 issues of this week development. Let's fix them and then let's push to production, because we could develop forever. But in this fast growing mobile space, like companies need to release fast and fast cycles. So you can't wait for like to fix everything. And like there are no products that are actually.
And you help me figure out where to spend the most time?
Yes, exactly.
How do you help me prioritize?
So we basically, what we look at is we usually look at the usage statistics of the customers. So what on what devices, on what locations our customers' products are used. We look at the App Store and Play Store reviews, for example, and then we just let our team of exploratory testers, the team is actually global, so our community is global today. We let them look at the product and figure out, like, okay, depending on the context, and our users' expectations, here are the issues that we should really put our focus on.
I see. So if you see, for example, that a lot of reviewers are saying, I use this in offline mode, that's why I love it, then anything that has to do with offline mode would get priority. I get
exactly.
It. All right. So I understand the problem with a Facebook group. We've gotten feedback, and it's hard to tell, is it someone making a stupid mistake, or is it an actual problem with the hardware? And then what you have to do when you get user feedback is come back to them and say, can you please tell me what device you're on? And they think they're on one device sometimes, and they're actually on another device. And all that stuff is just a big time suck. So I get the need for people who are experts at this. Let me ask you this. You guys don't fully hire the testers, right? It's a marketplace where they could come in and out whenever they want, right?
Yes, you're correct.
That's kind of a pain too, because now there are people who don't work for you, who you have to manage, who you have to train, but you know they're not obligated to stick around. Why not just hire a group of people who are all the same around the world? Actually, I think I understand the answer to that one. As I ask it, it sounds like a stupid question.
No.
But tell me about the advantage of a marketplace.
So definitely, like, the biggest advantage is that our testers are global, and whenever our customers need, like, for example, we have a US company that wants to expand to, like, let's say, to Italy, and we have those testers in Italy on local networks, on like devices that are mostly used by the locals, and that's where the benefit of a model like ours really comes in. It's the global reach of the community, and today we actually accept 3% of these testers into our community. So we have a lot of applicants, but at this point we're really focused on really expert testers, and so that's where our focus goes.
You know, one of the things that I've noticed in my interviews is the power of marketplaces, that we think so much of technology as being about software. The more you get the more you get into the software space, and especially SaaS, the more your recurring revenues build on themselves and you become a stronger company. But there's an inherent moat that comes from having a marketplace that's big and strong, because it's hard to replicate your marketplace and get testers in all over the world and all these countries that you have it in. It's hard then to get the same number of customers that you have. And so what I want to understand is how you did it. My sense is people are listening, not watching, so they're missing out. Your hair is very big today. It's what color is it?
Well, it was supposed to be pink, but as it's not the permanent color, it's coming off with every wash. And now
I see.
But I think it's pink, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen different haircuts or different haircut. What's interesting about you is that you are interesting, that you're interesting to pay attention to. You're interesting to read. You're here doing this interview. You're the evangelist. You're the person in charge of bringing in all of these community members, right?
Yes, you are correct. So, like, this entire idea of Testio was actually born out of my personal frustration as a tester. So before I started Testio, I was never dreaming about becoming an entrepreneur. I just wanted to build my career in testing and become the best at it.
In testing? You had a full-on job in testing?
Yes, exactly.
What company? So, is this FlexTrade Systems?
Yes, exactly. So before I started Testio, I'm from Estonia, just to make that clear as well. Mm-hmm. And after I graduated high school, I didn't actually know what I want to do with my life. And so I went to study programming in a local college. And during my second year in college, a lot of my classmates were telling me that, hey, Crystal, like, if you want to enter the tech industry, then, like, testing is an entry-level job, and you could really build your career out of this and become a great developer, essentially. And I was immediately sold by the idea. And so I started working for a small company in Estonia, moved on to a bigger company. And then I figured that testing is really my passion, because it really gives me the opportunity to connect with so many different teams and people in this development cycle, right? Like, you need to talk with the product managers, the designers, the developers, you need to understand the customer. And then I realized I really want to build my career in testing. And then eventually, after I graduated college, I just wanted to move away from Estonia to experience something new. And I went to London, and that's where I found a job in a company called FlexTrade. And yeah, that's how
I
it
see.
Happened.
And so you went from doing testing as a way of getting an entry-level job and understanding to actually make it a job, and you had it for about a year, am I right?
In London, yes, but before
in London,
that.
And before that, another year.
Exactly.
So 2 years total. And so what's the frustration that you had? It seems like companies were already understanding the power of doing quality assurance. It seems like they understood the value of testers. What's the problem that you saw that led you to start this company?
So one of the things is that testing, like one of the things that you mentioned in the beginning of this podcast as well, was that testing is actually the fastest growing IT segment. And companies were spending like 16% of their budget into testing in 2012. And now it has risen to 28%, which is huge growth, right? And it all comes from the fact that
28% of their budget is spent on testing?
Yeah, IT budget is spent on testing.
IT budget, I see, really?
Yeah, exactly. So the need is super high, right? And that's what we've seen over the years as well. And when I was working in London, I just knew that I want to build my career, like my career in testing. And
so no longer was it going to be a stepping stone to something else. Yes, it was that something else.
That was the thing. Where I, like in London, I just realized that it can be a career, like a separate career, and I can be very successful at it. And so in London, next to my full-time job, I started reaching out to like local testers. I started going to meetups. I started reaching out to thought leaders in the space to really figure out like how they became so successful at it and like how can I become like them, right? And so, and then the other thing that I did was I started like looking out for like different options, like how to test online or how to get my skills better. And like obviously the best option is to usually practice. And so I found out about different crowdsourced testing platforms. And I was just immediately fascinated about the idea that they connect testers all over the world on one platform with all these great customers, and I can get paid for it, right? And it seemed like a great option. And so I signed up to different communities. And one of the problems that I ran into was that they didn't really appreciate testers' time. So a lot of these communities are built up on quantity versus quality. So it means that testers are paid per issue, which means that they're not really incentivized to dig deep into the product and figure out what the issues are. Because any of us that, like our listeners, your audience, any of us can open up an app today and find like 10 issues from every mobile product that we use. But the real quality of testers or the real value of testers comes in where they help us prioritize, okay, what is important for us to test and on what devices and so on, right?
I see. So the low-hanging fruit, quick, easy issues, that's not really useful. It's more useful to dig in and figure out which of those issues is important and which isn't, and then maybe dig in deeper to understand the cause of it. Is that right?
Exactly. And then the other aspect of going after these low-hanging fruits was that the testers in these teams were not cooperating. But quality, in my opinion, was always supposed to be like teamwork, right? Like you need to talk with the developer, like you need to provide them feedback, you need to work with the testers together to understand like how can we provide the best experience for the customers. And so there was all this competition going on, and that's where I just started like bouncing ideas with my co-founder and now husband, Marco.
So you know what? Let me take a step away from your business for a moment and just ask you a philosophical question that I've been wrestling with here at Mixergy. I know that I can figure out how well my team is doing when it comes to booking by saying, we're going to have a metric. I need you to book this number of guests every month. And if you hit your number, great. If you don't, you fail. So with things like that, it's easy. With quantity, it's easy to measure. With quality, it's really hard. How do I give my team a goal of the quality of the interview? How do I give my team a goal to find not just guests to interview, but quality guests? It's really hard to do it. Some of it requires, you know, a sense of taste, a sense of understanding. Some of it's pretty arbitrary. I might value you more than I value tomorrow's guest, right? How do you do that? And it seems like it's kind of similar to what you're talking about. It was easy for companies to say to testers, we're going to pay you based on how many bugs, or we're going to judge you based on how many issues you find. But the quality and the depth of understanding is a harder thing to attach a metric to. How do you do that?
Well, it all comes down to the fact that how we work with our community. So we really work with the experts, with testers who have had a lot of experience in this industry. And then they really know how to adapt to different context of different businesses, right? And so we give them an opportunity through our platform to grasp all that information from our customers to figure out what's the best solution and then work together as a team to provide better results for the customers.
But that you don't have a metric around it. You're just saying you create an environment where that is part of the culture, but you don't give them a metric.
Exactly.
For everything.
Exactly.
I see. Okay, so you had this problem. You understood that there could be a better way. Then you're invited to a hackathon. Who did this hackathon?
Angel Hack. And we were not invited, but I just saw an ad in Eventbrite in London, and that initiated the first idea of maybe I should try this as a company. And I saw the ad of Angel Hack in London because they're actually a global hackathon. They started off in San Francisco. And when I saw the advertisement in Eventbrite, they had prizes you can travel to San Francisco to present to top VCs in the Valley and then $25,000. And that was to me, okay, I got to give it a try.
And did you go in there knowing what the idea would be?
Yes. So at this point, I had already all of these frustrations gathered on paper. I was discussing a lot of these ideas with my co-founder and now husband, Marco. And then, and he at the same time was actually building another startup, and he fell in love what I was doing, and he saw the passion that I had for testing. And he was like, I can't let you go alone, because a lot of the time when you go to these hackathons is you end up going with random strangers, basically building
right.
a product, and that really doesn't scale, right? If you want to build a successful company, you need to have a very strong team that can go through fire with you, right? And then Marco was like, okay, I'm going to come with you.
I see. Okay, so it's the two of you then going in saying, look, if you're going to have a team, let's have a team that you really care about and can take beyond this event. You go in there, you don't win first place.
Yes, we didn't.
You
want to know the reason?
What?
You want to know the reason?
What is it? Yeah.
So there were two companies out of 64 ideas that were selected as winners. And we got the third place. We were also invited on the stage, but only two first places got the tickets to present in the finals in San Francisco. And we basically, what we did was that as a couple, we were afraid to mention the fact that we are a couple. So we hid the fact that we've known each other for a long time. And so when I had to pitch Testlia on stage to all of the judges, I didn't mention anything about the team, zero about the team.
I see.
And then, but they still saw the passion that I had for testing, and they were like, oh, this is a great idea. And then what eventually happened was that the next day after Angel Hack, Marco was sitting in Google campus in London, and he just met the founder of Angel Hack, and he told the entire story of how we've been together for 3 years. We moved together to London. And then this guy was like, what? You should have told us immediately. And he offered us the tickets. And then 2 months later, we are in Silicon Valley and we got $25,000.
Wait, so even though you didn't win the tickets to come to San Francisco, he said, I like what you've done. I think you accidentally crippled your chances of winning. I'm going to give you a ticket anyway. You and
yes.
Marco.
Yes.
To fly to San Francisco, did he also pay to put you guys up in a place?
Yes.
You did. And that, frankly, is really expensive in San Francisco, more expensive maybe even than the flight. So you come in and then you pitch and you win, you get $25,000.
Yes, that's great.
What do you think registered with the audience that wouldn't have registered with me? Because as you saw, there was a time when I thought this whole thing was just too basic. Why did they understand it? What do you think registered with them?
I think at this point it was I was clearly understanding the market. I saw the need. I had my frustrations. I was showing them that there is a huge growth opportunity if you consider all these companies using these services that are not actually valuing the testers, right? But eventually it's going to come out, right? And then at the same time, I think that's what they really saw. And then the other aspect was the team, right? Like a team of me and Marco had been a serial entrepreneur since, since high school. So,
all right. You said I saw the need. Let me take a moment and come back, and I want to talk about a sponsor and come back and just challenge that, because I don't fully understand that. I understand your need. What I'm curious about is the need of your clients. So let me take a moment. I'm going to talk about a company called Formstack. Have you ever heard of Formstack, or are they about to reach a new customer right now here today?
I haven't. So good. This is the first time.
Here's what Formstack does. They do forms. And forms are another thing that you would think is just way too basic. There are too many companies out there doing forms already. What separates Formstack from others? Here's the thing about forms. If you think about it as just data collection, a little nicer design actually might increase your results. And great, there is a reason to pick a nicer form. And Formstack has a nicer design that's going to get you more submissions. But Crystal, the thing that I've discovered is the forms need to be more than that. They need to be smart, almost like programming for non-programmers. Here's what I did. I had this idea that maybe people wanted to learn how to do interviews because, Crystal, I was getting emails all the time from people asking me questions. What software do you use to record? How do you edit? How do you get your get? Bah, 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 bah. I said, you know what? Maybe this is something I should be teaching. So I sent out an email to my whole audience saying, would you want to learn how to do interviews if I taught it? And some people clicked yes, some people clicked no. If they clicked no, I had a form that said, why not? So I could learn, what was it about interviewing? Maybe they didn't understand it, etc. What are their objections? If they clicked yes, I asked them a few questions so that I understood why they wanted it. What's the goal? What do you need to learn about it, etc. Once they hit submit, then my form asked them, would you pay for this? Now, anyone who said no, I asked again. I said, why wouldn't you pay? Right? Maybe there's something that would make it a win for them. Anyone who clicked yes, I asked them right there on the form for their credit card. I said, look, I'm not sure what I'm going to charge, but I need to see that you're really interested and you really will pay. Put a little deposit down. I promise you could have it back anytime. And so the form was smart enough to know who to show the payment to and who not to, who to ask why not, and who to take on to the credit card page. And the form is smart enough to collect credit card payments. That is what a smart form should do. It should be like programming. It should collect the right data, give the right response, and allow you to do things like collect credit cards, allow you to do things like take that data and pass it into, maybe we're going to talk in a moment about Pipedrive. Maybe if someone did pay, I want to put them into Pipedrive. Maybe if someone did not pay, I want to put them into my email marketing software. Maybe I want to add it to a spreadsheet so people on my team have it. All that stuff needs to work. And that's what Formstack.
Formstack, yeah.
Good. I hope I didn't say Formspring.
You said
Formspring. I think that was like a company that failed.
I think you said Formstack.
I hope so.
Pretty sure.
Formstack is the company that I'm recommending you sign up for. Formstack will let you have these beautiful smart forms that will integrate with everything. They have native integrations with PayPal. They have native integrations with Google. They also have Zapier integrations, so many others. Here's what I urge you guys to do if you're interested. Just go check it out. Go learn a little bit more about it. And the best way to learn is by actually trying it. They have a free 14-day offer for you right now. You can try it. If you don't like it within 14 days, just cancel. No issue. If you do love it, and I think you will, you're going to get 25% off your first 3 months. And frankly, the pricing is so low that you're going to be happy no matter what you pay. Go check them out at formstack.com/mixergy to get that offer. Formstack.com/mixergy to get that offer. Oh, and that other domain that I was talking about, that other company is totally went out of business. And that's the other nice thing about Formstack. They've been around. Crystal, you take these forms, you embed it in your workflow, you embed it in your company. If the company fails or they adjust in some major way, your whole business is just now you have to go hunt down these stinking forms. Formstack has been around long enough that you know you can depend on them. Check them out, formstack.com/mixergy. The thing that I was wondering before I did that sponsored message is you said I saw the need. And I understand from a tester's point of view how you saw how it could be done differently. But the testers aren't the people paying. It's the companies. Did you do anything to understand that the companies had a big enough need, a big enough problem that they would pay you for a better solution than existed? Did you have that? And it's okay if you didn't. I'm just trying to understand it.
At this point, I actually didn't talk with any of the potential customers, but I just knew that a lot of the testers that I was looking up to, they were not part of these communities, of these crowdsource testing communities, because of the reason that testers were not appreciated, right? And then I immediately knew that if I would start something like Testlio, like they would want to be part of it, right? They would want to help and grow this community. And then this is like, bless you. And this was part of the... This is part of the need for me. Bless you.
Thank you. I hit the mute. All right. So you said I knew the need, but there was no way to fully know, except when you were pitching, you got an offer for someone to sign up. Who was the very first, not customer, but the very first user, the very first person who said, I want this service?
So the very first company that signed up was actually by the founder of AngelHack. And so at first, like, they were not the paid customer. I was just telling them that I'm going to help you test this product. And from there on, we got a paid customer within 2 months after the hackathon, actually. And that was a bigger
moment. What does AngelHack have? I don't think they have an app, do they?
Their founder had a product on the side, and I can't remember the name. My mind.
I see. And this was for him. He said, you know what? I really like the service. I get it. Can you please test it for me? All right. So exactly. before you got your first paid customer, you had a real user. Now it's time for you to go out there and get the testers. Where did you get the testers?
So I would say that since the beginning, it's been word of mouth. And it all started with me because I had a lot of my friends, they were testers, and I just invited them on board and we started testing together. And that's how it started growing eventually.
I see. And what was your process for testing with them?
So in the beginning, so at this point we have a platform that really helps us collaborate together with the testers, and it really seamlessly integrates with like different project management systems like Jira and Trello, Pivotal Tracker. So the customers really don't have to come to our,
that's what you use right now, Jira and Trello.
No, we integrate with them.
Okay.
We integrate with the services. But when we started, I was personally living in our customers' systems and manually syncing issues from like spreadsheets into our customers' project management systems. And then that's where the need came in for like building integrations and having this one place to gather all the issues.
I see. So you at first logged into their Trello account or logged into their, what was the other one? I forget.
Jira.
Jira, right. Which I can imagine was very popular with them because developers love Jira.
Yep.
And you were adding bugs into that, and you just went with your friends, your contacts, and that's how you got the first, that's how you serviced the first customer. Was it, I'm looking it up, Greg Kopman, who was the founder?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and so it was his business that you were working on. All right, yeah. And so then you got your first paid customer. How'd you get your first paid customer?
So our first paid customer came through the network of AngelHack. So AngelHack basically had like a two-month program before the finals that happened in January in 2013. And they just wanted to like, they basically, we had like weekly webinars with like successful entrepreneurs, and they were just telling about their failures and successes. And then at the same time, they put us together with a mentor who would help us prepare for the finals. And the mentor that we got was an owner of a mobile agency in London. And they were like pretty successful at this point. Like they were working for companies like BBC, Coca-Cola, and so on.
I see. And so suddenly, because of one client, you ended up working with many other clients. And so now you have to ramp up not just your collection of testers, but also the software that you use. Right. So the early days of marketplaces are really painful. You get one side of the marketplace, now you have to rush and get the other side. You can't just use Excel spreadsheets forever. You have to systemize it better. How did you get the rest of the testers? Was that easy? How'd you create the process for working with the testers?
Oh, so I would say that there's still a long way to go. Like we're still like building the processes, and as we're growing our testers network, especially in the US, it's still like there's a lot of like process improvements to be made in terms of like automating the entire workflow. But at this, like in the beginning, it was really all about me reaching out to testers, inviting them to be part of the platform. And then that's where we just worked together, and we worked in spreadsheets in the beginning. I think Marco actually developed a first Jira integration for the customer maybe 4 months later, but up until then it was just everything was manual, and I was working like crazy.
Manual, because you had to keep.
Yes, I had to keep up with like really syncing up with our customers' platforms.
So it was email, and you understanding their platforms.
Yes, exactly.
And you pass a request on to one of your testers. I see. Yep. And then you'd come back, and how would you keep track of hours and payment and all that?
And then basically we built the systems that whenever a tester actually completed a task, then they had to push a button, and that's where they got the payment. And we were doing payments manually until, like, I would say beginning of last year or something. So we were doing them manually for quite a long time.
Through what, like PayPal or something?
Yeah, PayPal. And then in Europe, there's another company, and I can't, sorry, my mind is going blank right now.
TransferWise seems to be really big in Europe now.
Oh, yeah, but they're not offering an API to, like, provide us, like, make us the payments.
I see. So,
but it's also an Estonian company, TransferWise, by the way.
It is?
I know the founders as well. Estonians know everybody.
I'm getting so many requests for people to anyone who wants to get paid outside of the U.S. seems to now, or at least in Europe, they want to get paid using TransferWise, and I'm having issues with them. They're now owned by PayPal, aren't they? Or maybe they let you log in with PayPal. That's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Peter Thiel is one of their investors as well.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So how'd you know what to charge? How did you know? I'm trying to think of all the issues with marketplaces, because they are such murder in the beginning that you almost feel like you made the wrong decision going into a marketplace. You have to get both sides. You have to figure out pricing. You have to be the intermediary communicating between the two, which makes it feel like a broken telephone game, the whole thing. So I'm trying to find all those little issues that people who are in this space are going to have and try to understand how you dealt with them in the beginning.
So for me, basically understanding how much the testers are getting paid and how much we should charge the customer, it was really coming down to, okay, the customer was saying, this is how much we would be ready to pay for this service. And then on the tester side, I was looking, okay, if I went to platforms like Elance or Odesk, for example, now it's called Upwork because they merged. I was just looking at different prices in different countries for these testers. And that's how I basically came up with a payment system for the testers. So for example,
what are they used to getting paid? We're going to come up with a price that's based on that. What are companies already paying for testers? Yes, got it. We're going to do that.
Exactly. So it was really basic. And I was just trying to figure out, I was just looking into different platforms like Odesk and Upwork to figure out, okay, how much are the testers actually getting paid? And then we had to, obviously, as a services business that is empowered by a platform, you really need to figure out, like, how are you going to keep your margins up as well? And so we figured that out by, for example, the fact that we have a global community, we can go to different testers around the world and keep our margins higher that way as well.
Can't get past your hair. It's so dramatic. It's big. It's pink. It's curly. It kind of reminds me, I was at a conference recently, and the founder of, I forget the name of the company that he has, had green hair, but it was beautifully done green hair with, like, the shade goes from green to, I think, yellow in the back in just the right way. And I couldn't stop looking at the guy. It was like I was in love with him. I kept staring at him. But that was his thing. Even, I don't know if the woman next to him was knew him personally or if they were working together. But she was wearing this dramatic green sweater too. You couldn't stop looking at them. Of course, I went over and I talked to him. I forgot the name of the company that he had, but I knew it had something to do with Frog, which is why everything was green. And then I understood that he also created a new business that he recently raised, I think, $1.5 million for. It's called Perfect.org. He's he wants to do for Swift, Apple's programming language. He wants to do for them what what Rails did for Ruby, is what he said. Anyway, the only reason I know all this stuff is because he had dramatic hair. These little things that will make you stand out.
Exactly,
they're so powerful.
Like, if you're creating yourself a brand, like, I haven't, like, forcefully, like, done something special to stand out from people, but I think it's very important when you're creating the brand, and especially if you go to, like, different conferences or, like, presenting webinars or even do this podcast, like, people will not usually remember what you said, but they remember how you made them feel and, like, how you look like, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah, Rand Fishkin used to go to conferences, the founder of Moz.com, used to go to conferences with yellow sneakers. Ben, I forget his last name, the guy who ran Icon Has Cheeseburger for a long time, he used to have these dramatic glasses. You'd go to a dinner, of course you're going to talk to the guy with the dramatic glasses. Even if you don't bring it up because you feel uncomfortable, you want to pay attention to him. I feel like I could use a look like that. It was the author of the 48 Laws of Power. He said, have something, a walking stick, something. And then he gave you historical references to people who had that.
I don't know if curly long hair would fit you. Sorry.
Curly long hair wouldn't. I don't know what, but it does need to be dramatic. It can't be a little bit. You have to almost have guts to do it. And then you feel like you're kind of coasting on the results. All right. So I get where you are. Here's something that you told our producer that I wanted to ask you a little bit more about. You said that one of the things that you learned from running this business is you need to have clear goals and key performance indicators for every department and for every person on the team. How do you give everyone on the team a KPI? I'd like to do that too. I've been thinking that. How do you do that?
Well, it all comes down to the fact that you need to hire leaders or managers into your team who will basically help you to drive like the vision to the entire company. Because like everything for us started changing after we grew past 25 people. And it was really challenging to go from this family-like person to an actual business, right? And that's where we started seeing. Like, that's where we started making a lot of mistakes. We were hiring people, giving them all these big titles, and we didn't make them accountable for specific, things that were happening in the company, right? Because we were still figuring
it out. So does everyone have a KPI?
Well, everyone has, yes. Like, the teams have KPIs that they have.
Who's this guy, Justin, on your team? Oh, no, he's not on your team. He's an outside consultant who helped book this. I'm trying to think of a role that is hard to add a KPI to. Do you have an assistant?
Yes, I do have an assistant.
So does your assistant have a goal, a metric to aim for?
Well, the way I track her performance is really through, I don't have hey, you need to set a specific number of meetings or anything. It just that comes down to my gut feeling at this point. Because we're still such a small team, you know exactly when something doesn't work or somebody doesn't slacks off. But if your team grows, you can start looking at the team KPI metrics, right? And if someone doesn't perform, then the team will be affected by it, and that's good.
I see. So maybe not every single role. Maybe I'm taking what you said exactly. What's the word? Can you give me an example of where a KPI has helped a team member, where maybe it wouldn't have been obvious to you before you started this business about 5 years ago?
I think that's a very good question. I like your questions are so deep.
Thanks.
But I think the biggest thing for us figuring out since the beginning, as we are a services business that is empowered by the platform, I think the biggest thing for the development team is to figure out how can they provide enough value. So now the biggest thing that we are going after is how many hours, how many customers can a QA manager, who's basically the project manager for the customer, handle. And this number has to grow over time. And this is what we're going to track. We don't track, is how many times our site was down or anything like that. The biggest, most critical KPI metric that we can't run without is understanding, how many hours can a QA manager handle each?
Why does it take so long to manage a client?
Because our customers are, we usually work with bigger enterprises and their needs vary from different customers' needs vary. And they need QA managers who will basically go on the phone with them on a biweekly basis, for example, gather their details, get their feedback, and then implement it to the community. And then the community will take care of it.
I see. And so the more times they're on the phone or the more hours they spend talking to a customer, the better it is.
Mm, yes.
As opposed to what? Where is the waste of time for them?
So the waste of time comes in from, if the QA manager goes into the platform and invites testers into a test cycle, that's all this manual part that they have to do. So the engineering team responsibility is to automate these workflows. So we immediately, when the tester or when the QA manager puts in the customer data and all the needs for this specific test cycle, the testers are already automatically invited into the project, for example. So just automating this entire workflow from the QA manager's perspective. so they can handle more customers and just be on the phone and get their feedback and get that feedback to the community.
Before we started, I said I was going to ask you what your revenue was. You said, I'm not going to tell you. I said, I'm going to keep asking you. You said, I'm not going to tell you. But you said, look, I'll tell you the names of the people. So, or the names of the companies. What are some of these companies that you're working with right now?
So I think some of the most exciting ones for us are like all of them are awesome, but Lyft, a lot of your audience probably knows.
The car sharing company, yes.
Yes, Microsoft. So we work with the Outlook team, for example, from we work multiple teams. Strava. So I think these are some of the ones that are pretty awesome.
Yeah, Salesforce, CBS Interactive, Flipboard, yes. GoDaddy, all these people have been customers of yours at one point or another.
Yes, exactly.
Revenue. What can you say about revenue?
I'm not going to disclose that to you, Andrew.
My team might have gotten this from Justin, the person who hooked us up for this interview. He said seven figures, so easily over $1 million. I mean, considering how much money you've taken in, the number of clients, that's an easy win for him.
Definitely.
Can you say whether it's over, is it absurd to say more than $5 million in sales?
Yes, definitely.
That's okay. It's not absurd for me to say it. You're saying yes, definitely more than five, right?
It's yes. Fun.
Okay. I'm about to do an ad for a company called Pipedrive. It kind of fits in with your story. What's your connection to Pipedrive?
So first off, they're an Estonian company. I know all of the founders. I know a lot of their employees, and they have a huge office in Estonia. So we have very close ties with them. And they're actually a customer of Teslio as well.
So you're testing out their iPhone app?
Yes.
Which is good. Their iPhone app used to suck. It used to just be nothing but a web view, which was really bad. And now it's really good. Now I'm like forcefully trying to use their software for other CRM other than booking interviews and dealing with customers because it's just gotten so good. It's intuitive. But also he gave you guidance, the founder of the company.
Exactly. What's the direction
that he helped you go on?
So the biggest thing was that Pipedrive went through an accelerator program in the US back when they started. They went through AngelPad here in San Francisco. And one of their founders, Ragnar Sass, we knew him from the like Estonian startup community, and he was organizing a lot of startup events. And then we started talking with him, and he immediately started giving us a lot of valuable feedback. And one of the things he said told us was that, hey guys, like, what are you guys doing here in Estonia? Like, you should get out of Estonia and apply to an accelerator in the US and see what's going to happen. And that's what we did. And since then, like, he's been super helpful and helped us with hiring, especially in the beginning. And that's where all this valuable feedback comes in.
Why? What was it about being in an accelerator that's so useful?
So as an Estonian company, Estonia is very small country, but I'm sure that a lot of like your audience has heard that Estonia is very innovative, but we still like Estonian companies, if they want to become very successful, they have to think globally from day one. And so
why an accelerator? Why not either bootstrap, considering that you've got paying customers? Oh, you just did something when I said bootstrap. What is it about bootstrapping?
Oh, no. Sorry. I just thought about the fact that I think the big value of accelerator comes in when you haven't never built a company before. Like, these accelerators give you the network of people. And I think in the beginning of building a company or a business, you need to have a lot of people that can support you, can give you a lot of feedback. And these accelerators just give you, like, put you through, like, the most intensive program over 3-month period. And you get so much feedback from, this business sucks, this business is awesome, here's what you should do, here are some customers that are interested in working with you. And I think that's where the value comes in.
Was there anything specific that you got from them that you didn't know before?
Definitely, like the connections, how to build a sales organization. So for example, through the Techstars network, we got like a very good advisor as well that we engaged immediately, and a year after, he was the one, like, we were having like regular weekly calls, and then he saw that we started growing, but I was obviously limited in my skills in terms of sales. And then he was like, hey guys, you should push yourself to the corner, hire a salesperson. And then we were able to, thanks to him, he started looking out for like potential candidates, and that's where like everything started taking off for Testio crazy as well.
I'm looking as you're talking about, I'm looking at AngelPad's site, and I'm mm-hmm. looking at PipeDrive on AngelPad. Apparently they're worth 70 plus billion, million dollars, excuse me. I don't know that the Angel, I'm surprised that AngelPad would even list their potential valuation, but it's over $70 million, raised $15 million. Oh. I'll be honest with you. When I first heard that they were in Estonia, I was a little hesitant to use them.
Why?
Because I wasn't sure if it was one dude in his garage. I never heard of them, never heard of the company. Is this software that I can count on? Is it something that's going to work? So I wasn't sure. But I had this deep problem. Here's my problem. I think anyone in sales is going to identify with this, even though this is not exactly a sales problem. My problem was I had all these guests that I wanted to have on Mixergy, but the process of getting a guest on was a pain in the butt, right? I would ask someone to be on, someone on my team would follow up with them, and then we'd forget and we wouldn't know. And we would ask some guests, and then we'd have some weeks where we had a lot of guests, some weeks when we didn't have any guests. It was just really chaotic. And then I heard from one of my past interviewees that PipeDrive helped him close more sales. He said that changed everything for one-on-one sales, the best. So I started looking into it out of desperation. And what I noticed was the site at the time was a little clunky. Now it's super smooth. But at the time it was like, here's this big YouTube video for 10 minutes explaining to you how PipeDrive works because you won't know. It's a whole new paradigm. And they were innovative in it. And what I saw was, you could create your own columns, one column for each step of your sales process. Every time you have a new potential sale, you create a card for them and you move them on column one. And then as you progress them through your sales process, you move them from column to column until the end. And so suddenly we had a clear visual of where our guests were. Suddenly we have a clear visual of how well we're doing. More importantly, I had stats. I could see that we were spending something like half a year getting somebody to say yes. And then finally having them on the site, that's unacceptable. Your whole life changes in half a year. You forget why you said yes in half a year. So PipeDrive gave us that kind of data. PipeDrive showed us where we were dropping people off. It was like the third step in our process where we were losing too many people. All we had to do was add another step. It was like a follow-up step. Boom, our numbers turn around. So most people who are listening to me are not into booking interviews, but they are into sales. I am telling you guys, if you're into closing sales and you'd want to do it as a collaborative team, I mean, you could use it as an independent person. It'll give you a good accountability to make sure that you're actually following up with people, show you who you're not following up with. You'll get a lot out of it. But as you add more people, you have the ability to collaborate. For example, I might suggest a guest on the team. Andrea will send them an email. Someone else will actually do the pre-interview, and we all get to see where the guest is. And our goal is to close them, meaning have them on the site. So if you're looking to collaborate, if you're looking to close more sales, if you're looking for stats to show you where you're failing and stats to show you when you're frankly being lazy or where someone on your team is being lazy, you owe it to yourself to go check out PipeDrive. I love these. These guys could come in and kick me in the head every day. I will still use it. They could move back to Estonia and be a one-man operation. I will still use it because it's so good. Go check them out at the special URL where you're going to signal to PipeDrive that you come in for Mixergy, and they will take care of you really well because they know how much I've been talking them up and how good I am for their business. Go check out pipedrive.com/Mixergy. They're going to let you try it for 14 days for free. You will close a sale within 14 days if you use it, and they're going to give you 25% off for 3 months thereafter. So go check them out, pipedrive.com/Mixergy. Go look at the archives. I've been raving about them for years before they ever bought an ad. I'm going to rave about them for years after they stop buying ads. I'm grateful to them for being a part of Mixergy and supporting us. All right, you raise money. You start to go in. You went from just like having this guy tell you go raise money or go into an accelerator, suddenly being a machine. You raise $1 million in your seed, $6 million in your A. Am I right?
Yeah.
How do you get so good at raising money?
Are we good at raising money? How do you know that? I don't know.
That's not bad.
Well, I think
TechCrunch told me, frankly, they had a whole write up about you and your raising money, and others did too.
But businesses are not, really about raising money. It's really all about sustainably growing. And I think what's good about the business for Testio is that mm-hmm. we've been really, really focused on creating revenue since day one. And until basically within Series A, we were still profitable. And now we're burning some money to grow the business more aggressively and hire in advance to support the growth. But it's not about raising money. It's not.
So it's about getting customers to grow. What do you do to get more customers then?
So we have a sales organization, and in the beginning of this year, which is almost 4 years after starting Testlio, we decided to hire our marketing team. So before that, we didn't do any marketing. And up until that point, it was just our salespeople going after customers. And
what was your process back then for getting customers?
For getting customers? So at first, when I started with Testlio, it was just me like selling the product. And after we went through the Techstars Accelerator program in 2013, I was still the one like doing the sales. And then at this point, I was just talking with a lot of Techstars company. And I think that's one of the big
Because you benefits. Were also, you went through Techstars, is that right?
Yes, exactly.
And so you said, you know what, all these people are potential customers of ours. I'm going to call them up one at a time.
Exactly.
What was your process for selling them? Was it, hey, I went through Techstars, I've got a new company, can I learn from your experience? That's what it was.
Exactly.
That's and then, by the way, here's what we do. Do you want to sign up?
Yeah, exactly. I see. I just got in touch with them, said like, hey, I'm like also a Techstars company. This is what we do. Like, would you be interested in chatting with me? And then there were a lot of companies that were actually interested. And then I think one of the biggest turning points for us was when that was in 2014. And until then, we were actually just like a services business. So we didn't have any subscription revenue, right? Like our customers came for maybe for one cycle or for one cycle after every 2 months. We didn't have any predictability in our model. And then when after Techstars, I started raising money because I felt that, oh, we have this huge momentum after this accelerator, we should use it. I failed in fundraising, right? And then a lot of the feedback that I started getting from all of these investors was that, hey, you don't have like a predictable revenue model, right? Like we were just charging customers like as a services business. And then everything changed in the beginning of 2014 when I met a company here in San Francisco called Accompli, and they were an email application. And I met their founder and he told me that, hey, here's like we are building this email application. We would love to use you. And he actually heard from us, he saw a guy in a co-working space wearing our hoodie with We Test mobile apps. Uh-huh. And he actually got like an introduction to me and we met and he told me that, okay, I just want to use you for 3 months. I have this other company in India full of testers and I'm going to give you 3 months to compete with them. And then over the 3 month period, they obviously realized we are better. And then from there on, we started focusing on the subscription business. And that's where our
advisor. What's a subscription version? What does somebody get on a subscription that they.
So the good thing about the testing market is like you can test, like you develop your product and you always have to test and you have to keep the quality high. So our customers that we work today are all coming back to us like after every week. So mm-hmm. They test on a weekly basis with us. And for example, a lot of our customers do their testing on the weekends. So for example, they send us their product on Friday evening and get the results back on Monday morning. So all the magic happens when they are asleep or at the party or whatever.
I see.
Yeah. And then from there on, when we got the first subscription business, that's where I realized like what we really need to do to grow this. And that's where our advisor said like, hey guys, like let's hire a salesperson who can come in and expand the business. And yeah, she came in and she's wonderful.
And so when you started to expand, at first it was you calling up people who you know or are connected to in any way and seeing if they would sign up. Then there was this random person from Accompli. They ended up selling to Microsoft. I think now they're the new Outlook, right? That's
yes,
the backbone
exactly.
of Outlook, yeah. At least the iOS version of Outlook, I should say. And then when you hired the salesperson, what did the salesperson do to take your process to the next level?
So I think at this point, it was really going after bigger customers. Like I was just going after my own network or Techstars network, essentially like full of yeah. startups. And startups are like, we were very unpredictable, right? Like you have this goal and sometimes you don't hit it. And then the test cycles were really random and we couldn't really predict and our workflow either. And then she came in and she started immediately talking with bigger companies. And that's where we realized that this is where we'd like to go.
How'd she get into bigger companies?
Because she was actually working for a company called the Purify before she came to us, and the Purify was acquired, and then we got in touch with her, and then she decided.
Oh, so basically,
to join us.
So the companies that she'd worked with before, she has access to now.
Yeah, exactly.
That seems like a big thing in the enterprise world. You hire someone who already talked to your customers, and then they go back to the customers they worked with before, and they say, "Hey, I'm working at this new business. Can I tell you about it? And I think it'd be a good fit."
Exactly. And like a Purify was essentially a cloud testing platform. So you can write your scripts and access like real devices on cloud. And this company was acquired by Google. And then she came in and she really like she loved our team and she loved the product. And she felt that like all the customers that she had been working with, like they could all benefit hugely from Testlio as well. And that's where like she came in and said like, "Hey, let's do this."
As she started to structure your sales department, what did you learn about the way that she structured an enterprise sales department that you could share with us?
I'm trying to think, maybe the bigger things were, like really building out the process, like understanding, okay, here's how many leads I'm going after. Like, here's the conversion rate, like from going from lead to scoping, or from lead to demo to scoping and to actually closing the businesses, and just building out this entire process. And
to have a clean process, kind of like what I was talking about having a pipe drive. She laid that out, and then she had a plan for it. What else did she do?
Well, at first it was just us, like as she was a single salesperson for us for such a long time, she just went after her personal connections and she was just selling. And we were just me. Personally was like managing projects for quite a long time as well, and I was just supporting her, and that's how it worked in the beginning. So it wasn't as structured as you are imagining right now.
I see. And now it is more structured because as you bring in more people and everyone has a certain number of leads that they need to go after. Where do you get your leads?
So we have an outbound sales team that just go after different customers. And then we have a marketing team. So our marketing team today is 4 people, and we just started hiring marketing team in the beginning of this year.
I want to get to the marketing in a moment. The sales team, the outbound is, what are they called? SR something?
SDRs.
So SDRs. So it's people whose whole job is to go out and find people for your sales team to talk to.
Yes.
And what's their process for finding those people? Is it sending out emails to potential customers?
Yes.
It is. So they send out email. They wait to see who responds. As soon as someone responds, they book them with the salesperson, then the salesperson comes on.
Yeah, you got it.
This is what I'm learning. Did you know that, what's the guy's name? Lemkin. What's his name?
Jason Lemkin.
He has a co-working space just for sales teams. You know how obsessed he is with SaaS and sales, right? This is his investment obsession. I didn't know he had co-working space just for sales teams here in San Francisco.
Yep.
That's one of the things you learn by being here. And then through that, they all get to see how they each sell, and they learn about these what are they called?
SDRs, so sales development representatives.
Sales development representatives. They send out their emails. They get the people. I see. And this is what you now have. Okay. So going on to marketing team, the person who contacted me was from like an outside agency, Maldin Consulting.
Justin Maldin. Yeah.
Oh, I see. This is Justin's company. What he did was he gets people into the press. So he got you some press here. I see Embracing the Valley's new mantra, sustainable growth. That's an article about you, complete with a photo by you, which is always the best. You know, if you get really good photos, if you could, because most people are just going to look at the photo, look at the headline, and then move on. So his job is to get you and your story out in as many different outlets as possible.
Exactly.
That relate to your business.
Exactly. But this is only a small part of our marketing team, obviously.
Yeah, so you were starting to talk about it before and I interrupted. Tell me more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but marketing is fairly new for Testlio, but it really fuels into our SDRs work, right? Like they need to build the brand, like they need to build the landing pages, they need to build out the messaging, like how are we selling Testlio, and really going out to like conferences, organizing meetups, and then figuring out like where can we get the most leads and where should we invest more. So right now we are in a phase of really understanding of like where is the best way for us to go to, like is it meetups or is it that specific dinners for customers, like potential prospects, is it Is it really like the press? We don't know yet, right?
I see. I see. And this is all part of the exploration. You've also, it seems like you've done more blog posts, and the blog then, right, collects, you're smiling. Is that true?
Yeah, we do a lot of blog posts. So we have a content marketer internally. Mm-hmm. Then I personally blog a little bit as well. And then we have a couple of writers outside of the Testlio team as well.
And when someone's on your blog, there's a pop-up, or I guess it's a modal pop that comes up that says sign up for blog updates.
Yes, exactly.
I don't like that. I think you guys could do better than that.
Really? Okay.
Sure.
Thanks.
Because
for the
no
feedback.
One wants blog updates via email. That's not enticing enough. And then the button says subscribe, which to me feels like, oh, be obligated and committed, right? I think it's much better. You want to hear my feedback on that?
Yeah.
I think you should find some kind of guide that relates to what you're doing and say, get this guide. And then add me to the mailing list at that point. I don't think that a blog post is enticing enough. I'm trying to see if there's a guide here that you guys offer. Like the tip for finding the right tester, what to test, that kind of a thing. Something that relates to your business. But I think it should be some kind of guide. This has been done for a long time, so I'm not inventing something brand new, but I think you're going to find much better response rate from that. I do like how on the bottom of your post you have a reach out to us for the demo.
Yes.
What's testlions.slack.com?
So the cool thing is that if you add N in the end of our name, you get Testlion. And basically, we call our community members Testlions, and we call our internal team members Testlions as well. Uh-huh. And so we're just a big group of Testlions. But testlions.testlio is basically just like the university for our testers. Like that's where we
for
share
your testers.
Content.
This is how you keep your testers together in your community.
Exactly. So we share the content. Obviously, there's a lot more work to do, but this is where we like to really engage them and be proactive and read about latest strategies and processes and how to become a better tester. And that's what we are called, Test Lions.
I see. All right. I get that. I'm noticing that too. In marketplaces where every man is out for himself, you want to have some kind of online thing where it's like more of a message board, it feels like. But the people who are matchers have Slack groups for their people. Because you want more of a bonding, you want more immediate responses, right? If someone's having an issue, they need a quick way to talk to the team and to other people, right?
Yeah, we do too. So we have our Slack group. Like we used to manage all of our testers on our platform because we also have a chat system built on our platform. And like every time when there is a project coming up, the testers can like just chat in Testlio. But then we realized that to have like more engaging conversations about anything in testing, like Slack could be the best option for us. And at first it was just Skype, but obviously Skype didn't scale.
No.
And then we added everybody on Slack. So yeah, that's how we engage with them. And at this point, we've also started doing like meetups. And so we try to do them more.
For Test Lions.
Yeah, exactly. And we already have a couple of testers, for example, in Ukraine that have got together and just chatted about Testlio and that's how we do it. But yeah, community building is like community is the heart of, I think, any marketplace, right?
Aren't you worried though that they're going to say, hey, look, you know what? Testlio is sending you out much. How often is Testlio sending you out? Oh, I see they're giving you that much business. Why aren't they giving me that as much business as you? Hey, you know, Crystal, I noticed that you're sending this. Aren't you worried that they're going to be upset as they find out who you're sending out more than the other? Aren't you worried that there are going to be issues where people start to say, hey, I'm getting paid really well by Testlio, but there's another company that I'm getting paid by too? And all that stuff could happen in private messages. You have no access to that.
Yeah, well, like this can happen to your internal employee as well, the same thing, right? But yeah, the way we really engage with our testers is like they understand our value proposition. They understand, like they see like why we are so much better than any other crowdsourced testing company. And there are so many testers that have come to us and finally feel that like we have elevated QA in these organizations that we work with, right? And that's what is really rewarding for them to be part of this community where QA we've taken it to another level, and we really help companies to change the way QA is done.
All right. Final question. Yeah. We sometimes in the pre-interview ask guests about a book that they recommend to the audience. You had one that I'm wondering why. What's the connection? Extreme Ownership. What is it? It's by Jacko Willink.
Yeah.
What is it about extreme ownership?
Oh my God. You have to read this seriously.
I don't know.
Especially if you're managing a team yourself as well, then it's just a must have. And the reason why I love this book, and it's actually one of the books that the Pipedrive founders recommend to all of their employees as well, is because the book tells you a story of a U.S. Navy SEAL, Jocko Willink, who's the author of the book, how he went to battlefields in Iraq and how he had to pull through his team from life to death situations, and how leadership changes the dynamics on the battlefield as well.
And so what did you take away from that?
Well, the biggest thing that I took away from it is, like, whenever there is something happening in the company, there's no one else to blame than yourself. Like, you always have to look up to yourself, and it always comes down to the leaders. There's a very interesting story in this book where he was running an experiment in, like, they were basically training, right? And there was a competition, and there was one team that was just always like the last one. And then what they did was they changed the leader of the first team and put it into the last team that was like the slowest.
Yes.
And then the last team became the first one.
I see. And so the point is that it's the leadership, it's not the team.
Exactly. And I think it's a wonderful book. It's very thought-provoking, and yeah, I just recommend it to anyone who ever has to manage a team, and it really puts things into a different perspective. And seriously, we're building software companies here. Like, this guy was on a real battlefield. There were some tragic loss happening that is influencing him forever, right? Like, we never run into these situations ourselves, right? And so I think it's wonderful.
All right. You know what? I think I have heard of it before. I don't think I've read it. I'm getting it now. I was looking online to see how I could get it. Strangely, Google showed up Barnes & Noble above Amazon, and it took me to a page where Barnes & Noble, which I haven't visited in a long time, rents out books. So I could rent this book for a period of 60 days for $6.84. Barnes & Noble, what is your problem? That is...
Wow.
I could see how they're experimenting, but for... It's what? It's like $13 to own it on the Kindle. You can get it used online. I'm shocked, but I'm rooting for Barnes & Noble, but I feel like it's kind of a lost cause if this is the way they think. That's not going to work, people. All right. Thank you so much for being on here. I've learned a lot from you. The website for anyone who wants to go check it out is Testlio. That's test as in test and L-I-O at the end. Basically like test line without the N at the end. Only I could have gotten you like testlion.com on this call. Think of how much of a hero I would have been to all the test lions in the business. But somebody has it and they're not doing jack with it.
Yep.
Let me see if I could figure out who this person is. Hang on. I go to whois.com, one of my favorite sites, because it's very easy to do a quick search and see who owns a site. Whois.com. Like, I was searching one of your referral links. It turns out it's Marketo. You guys use Marketo for your email, right?
We do.
I only knew that because they had this mask domain, and Whois gave me that information. This is a guy. Oh, he's using perfect privacy. I'm not going to be able to be a hero here. All right. Sorry. Well, if you're listening to me and you own Tess Lyon, she's got $7.5 million in the bank. Call her up. and this is where you say, but Andrew, we spent a lot of the money. Our investors don't want us to change our name. It's a great story. Thank you so much for sharing it. Testlio.com for everyone who's listening. And if you want to sign up for the two software that I talked to you about, the first will set up your forms in an intelligent way, very much like programming without being a programmer. It's done right. It's called FormStack. Check them out at formstack.com/Mixergy. And the second company is one that changed our whole business around, added professionalism to our operation. If you're looking to sell, you should do it. You should sign up for it. You should try it out. You'll love it like I do. It's called Pipedrive. And if you're Estonian, you're especially going to love it. Check them out at pipedrive.com/Mixergy. Crystal, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you all for listening. Bye, everyone.